am going to talk about energy today and approaching it as personal energy sustainability. You know, we try to do this with our homes, with our input and output of trash and things, but the same thing can be said for our personal energy. So first we have to talk about energy, and then I'll talk about sustainability. And I'll stop every once in a while, and you can ask your questions or you can wait. This is called Energy, a Sufi Point of View, Personal Energy Sustainability, and we have to define what energy is first. So scientists define energy as the ability to do work. Now, the brain has an output of 20 watts, and it consumes 20% of our body's energy. This covers all of our thinking, and we use machines and muscles to move, transform things. We turn bricks into houses. We mine in from tunnels, and we heat that up, and turn it into a mold, and from the mold, it turns into metal and into bridges and apartment buildings and all kinds of constructions. So all this life and all these resources are from the collision of massive energy of several stars banging together over billions of years. So we're here because of the energy of creation. And whether your view is scientific or faith-based, we are here and we will never have enough information or illumination to see or understand how our little life fits into the big picture. As humans, we're limited in every possible way except maybe for love and surrender. We are targets from infinite array of sources. We may be burgled, mugged, caught in a tornado or a car accident. Our parents and loved ones will die. We're going to get hurt. There will be pain and there will be joy. You know, so how do we choose to use pain? Well, we can turn the experience into something valuable, or we can turn over and play the victim. We know so very, very little. Our onboard computer brain only has what we've put into it. And to be honest, there's more information outside than there is in the little gray matter. We can't comprehend the whole circus because our brains would probably explode. And that'd be messy, and who's going to mop that up? But what we can do is learn how to listen with our heart instead. So if we take a positive view that the universe is not vindictive, it's not going to act like a 14-year-old, it's not angry at us, it's imagine that this loving intelligence wants us to grow, to be happy, to be loved and to love, to become mature and learn how to get along with Allah, ourselves, and others. We're here because of love, and nothing happens without Allah's permission. It's Allah's universe. It's her life, their time. We own nothing because it all has to be returned to the original owner at the end. Now, about sustainability. If we wish to live honorably, it's advisable to remember to keep our word, our promises, and our intentions clear. So let's try to aim to keep our own energy footprint clean. Actions we set into motion will eventually return to us because we're the perpetrators. And what we say and what we do is ours. It belongs to us, only us. And we're the only one responsible for what we say and do. And what goes around comes around is true. It's the basic physics of personal energy. So we're responsible for our words and actions. We're not responsible for others, except as a parent. But even when raising children, we strive to be what we want our children to become. And being an example is difficult enough. To show what we want, we choose to look out for our reactions, acknowledging when we recognize our biases, our nefs, traumas, and habits. It's not our job to point those facets out to others, nor are we meant to solve each other's problems unless you're a friend and they're asking for help, or it's your family, or your job is a qualified therapist. Questions here? Any? Shall I continue? Yeah? Okay. So each person we meet brings their own energy into the room. Now, it's not ours, nor our responsibility to change it. We are responsible for how we react. So if Abner comes in, storming in about and yelling about his boss, well, that's not our boss. And the lesson being taught to Abner is not our lesson. So he's either open to learning the lesson, not our job, or he's not. He may assume the victim position. That's his choice. And what we can choose to do is remain centered, listen with our heart to his complaints, or we can leave the room. But the most important thing is, what does your heart say? So being aware that you are carrying around a field of energy that's yours. And wherever you're at with that is what makes the room smell that way. Now, we don't perceive it as smell, but we perceive it a little more subtly. We can still feel it. We can still feel when somebody is anxious, fearful, nervous, shy, introverted, extroverted, wants attention. So we can see it in others. It's easier to see it in others than in our own self. Okay. Comments, questions? Yes, Amina, go ahead.
Okay. I find that it's very hard not to react sometimes to a person who's overly anxious. And my natural instinct is to tell them it's okay to calm down. And I think that triggers in me growing up where, yeah, I had to be that, I had to ground myself with, yeah, my parents who, yeah, one of my parents who was super anxious. So I'm very sensitive when people are anxious, and I can read that energy. So I walk away feeling from that, oh, like, and sometimes, yeah, like I feed on, I feed that energy and I can't kind of, I get stuck in, it's like, oh, should I not have said anything? Should I have walked away? But yeah, so even though I try to say it's okay, I do react to that. And yeah, I find that hard not to react to that.
Right. I know what you mean. I had it worse. I would become whatever the energy was. When somebody walked into the room, I would actually become that person. I had no boundaries whatsoever. I would just mutate into being with that person and kind of like jam with that person from their emotional point of view. The trick is first to want to see what is happening with you in that relationship, in that moment that you're with that anxious person or whatever their emotions are. So my suggestion and a way that I was able to overcome that was just to observe, to be a witness to what was happening without acting, without any reaction or anything, but to kind of what we've talked about before is get off the stage and go sit in the audience. Watch the script being played out. Watch the actors, you know, applaud them when they do well, you know, have a great time. It's a show. You don't have to be on stage. So you sit down, you watch the show for a little while until you begin to see what the expectations are and what the script is. Once you understand what is trying to be evoked from you or from anybody, you can then enter back into it without reacting, because you know the story. You know what they're after. Usually it's affirmation of their worth. Everybody wants love. That's really kind of the bottom line. I want to be seen. See me. Hear me. And if you take the time to do that with your heart and you go, I see you, I hear you, I understand this, and you have a little bit of grounded energy with them, they will calm down. But has it ever worked to say calm down? No. Calm down. I am calm down. So breathing is the first order of business, and then feeling the bottom of your feet on the ground so that you are on the ground, you're grounded, you're taking the energy. Whatever is coming, it's probably very spiky coming off this. You want to ground that energy. You want to breathe in your own time, in your own space, and assess what the situation is. You don't have to react. Don't react. If you do react, don't show anything. Just be neutral. This is why I think poker is an excellent teacher for Sufis. You've got something in your hand. You just don't want to give it away right now. You don't want any tells. You want to stay neutral and observe, be a witness. After a couple times, you may get the idea of what needs to happen here and do what needs to be done. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, so in the first part is not to show any reaction. If you don't show any reaction, things will happen that are you don't know what's going to happen. Just see what happens.
So just ignore them.
Not ignore them. Observe them. Be there with them, but don't respond in the old way. Say, you can do what's called active listening. I understand that you are upset. And you're upset because Annie broke the vase. Is that right? Yes, that's what happened. Okay. Message received. Message understood. Is there something that you wanted to do about that? Yes, she's got to pay for it. Well, she's 3 years old. How do you think she's going to pay for this? You know, and be reasonable and grounded. Don't be curt or abusive or condescending. It's more like, being the being the adult in the room. Oh, okay. Well, let's see if we can figure this out. Yeah. So the other way to look at this is you are the representative of your world. If you get caught in another person's world, they've just brought you into something that you don't know anything about. We each represent, we're the ambassador of our world. So essentially, we all have diplomatic immunity up to a certain point. But if you confront, this is a declaration of war. If that's where you want to go. But as they say, pick your battles. Okay. Does
it, yes. Makes sense.
Yeah. So backing, in other words, you want to stop the old reactions by just stepping back out of the scene and observe and witness.
And I guess in my case, that cube would be when I start feeling these emotions rise in me, instead of reacting, just need to observe them and say, oh no, like just observe, don't react, don't say anything.
That's right. Now, the work outside of that is on that reaction, away from that person, so you can examine that reaction and ask, why is this happening? There's some kind of nut, some kind of energy stored there that this person sets off. What is that? And then you begin the NEFS determination of how to resolve that problem. Now, it could be what's the best strategy to get rid of it? What's going to fix it? What does it take to put it down so that it doesn't control you?
Question for you, Sheikh. I just put myself back on mute. Sorry. What you just said there about afterwards, you know, you had a reaction, have a look at that. So I guess something that just jumped out at me was that it seems like the times that I've been able to make progress on, you know, a particular aspect of my NAFS is when I didn't react to something in the usual way. Maybe I'm trying to remember if I ever felt like it and just went to, and didn't give into it. But that is it. So sorry, just bear with me for a second here. So before you were talking about, you know, what comes around goes around, is me reacting to someone or something, some situation, an example of what comes around goes around in the sort of the negative sense, where I won't sort of get the opportunity when I'm reflecting on the offline to actually make progress. Does that make sense? Was that a little too convoluted the way I worded it?
Can you put it in a sentence, an interrogatory sentence?
Okay. Do I lose the ability to objectively, or maybe even objectively isn't the word, do I lose the ability to make gains on reflecting on a reaction that I had later if I give in to the reaction in the moment?
That depends where your witness is. If you're witnessing yourself doing that, that's information. That's you know, in talking about the art of war, because we're at war with our nefs, in Lao Tzu's idea about art of war, you first have to send a spy in to figure out what's going on in the tents of this enemy. If you find yourself reacting, you can then afterwards go back and go, I was reacting about that. Then you can begin to source out where that comes from. I mean, sometimes it's kind of like it's just a surprise to find yourself reacting. You go, I didn't know I had anything connected with that, but that's information. It's just data. So you take that at later, put it on the workbench, as it were, and take it apart and see where did it come from? What is the source? And then once you figure out where the source is, it came from something that happened on a camping trip with my parents, you know, maybe, you know, whatever, wherever it came from, and then go, that was that moment that this and this and this happened, you know. Then you look at that and determine a strategy of how can I unscrew that so it isn't affecting my life when I'm in contact with that kind of relationship. Does that make sense? Some strategies or, you know, modalities, if you will, require specific psychology or psychological techniques to help you get rid of it. If it's really old or traumatic, causing any kind of like PTSD or something that takes you out of the moment, then that may require some deeper kinds of therapy. Some are about, you know, maybe just getting a zicker going or a reminder that you're working on this. But the idea is that you keep it in the forefront of your consciousness. Understand it's going to take some time, but you keep working on it. You keep that as your one, you aim your army of energy at this one specific nefs. And you keep going with that 2 to 4 months of concentrated work. You get through it, and then there's a test that comes up. It'll come back again, and then you can find out if you passed or not. Yeah, okay. Is good.
Can I add something I learned this morning from gardening?
Sure.
So there's a big sapling that had grown up in the, I call it the back jungle, the part that I haven't quite got to yet from when we came in and everything was jungle in our house. And I was like, oh, I need to get that sapling out. Otherwise, it's just going to keep growing and it's going to be harder because the roots are going to get bigger because we just didn't want it there. But of course, in order to get to the sapling, there were like sort of another hour's worth of weeding to get other stuff out of the way so I could get to that. So as I was saying, it's interesting when, like, if you can aim for something that you think is like the big one, there's sometimes you've still got to do work around that, even to be able to get to a place where you're able to attack something that's big like that. You can sometimes have to deal with some little things as well. Anyway, I felt that it was very metaphorical for me at the moment because I'm like, I want to sort this out. And it's like, no, deal with this first and this. But when am I going to get to that? Like, well, when you clear all this out of the way.
Yes, that's the other thing that we learn as we do this, that it requires patience, work, time, and work is effort. And as I always say, you also need a sense of humor. You need to be able to laugh at yourself, or you're going to take it too seriously and become a victim.
Oh, why do I have to do all this? This is hard.
It's too hard.
Oh, look at me. I'm sweating. This is taking too much time.
Bad things happen to good people? More importantly, why do bad things happen to good people like me?
Sometimes you have to clear things out before you get to the thing that you really want to, is part of the nature of learning how to be patient. Patience is kind of one of those aspects of a law that we work on for the rest of our lives. We can always be more patient. And the way that I think about it is, Allah is patient with us. Try to imagine what he's seen you do and how stupid you've become and stupid stuff you've done and these constant mistakes of this and that. And Allah has allowed you to live and learn. Because he could have just gone, now, let's try again. I need somebody that can think, somebody that can work this out. He's patient with us because we can learn and we grow. That's the thing about being human that took me a while to accept, that Allah didn't make us as angels and he didn't make us as just monkeys or demons or anything. He made us able to make mistakes and learn from them and not get too wound up in,
oh, I'm so stupid, I made mistakes.
It's kind of like, yes. Now, what were we talking about, being an adult in the room? The adult says, yep, made a mistake. How can I not make that again? What do I need to do to change my behavior so that doesn't happen anymore?
That can be really huge, hey, because sometimes the symptom, like what you think is the problem, is just a little symptom, and the roots, as I look at a behavior that I'd like to change, but then I realize in order to change that behavior, I almost have to change my whole lens that I view life through, a whole heap of habits that lead up to that behavior, a whole heap of coping strategies and all these other things. Like that's just the very tip of a very big iceberg that might need shifting. And then it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah. And if you think of it in a more, even more meta sense of the seven makams, of shifting your perspective from first, it's all about me, and then it's all about not me, and then it's all about some me and not me, and it's a balance, and then the changes to like a learning how to flow a little better, and then learning, you know, all these different aspects. So within one perspective, you can have these steps that will start shifting your attitude toward life, until you come to this big step that puts you over into, okay, now we're in a new perspective. It's a new environment. It's a new way of perceiving, and the capacity of understanding it has changed. Yeah.
So it gets easier.
Kind of.
Well, because I guess you've already worked on what you thought was a big burden or an obstacle.
Oh, dear.
And then you get a new perspective, and it's kind of...
No? Put it this way, Amina. Are older children easier than younger children?
No. Is that a question or a statement?
it's just a reflection. My experience is it's a bit similar to that. It gets... different rather than different. Yeah. Kind of easier in some ways, but then it's like you have more to deal with because you're better at it, so you get more to deal with, and then it's like, yeah.
it's
always as hard as it needs to be.
It's never ending.
It's never ending. And the thing is that you learn less, how do I say this? You learn less and less, or you learn, you know, less and less.
Yeah.
The more that you learn, it's kind of like, geez, I didn't know anything about that. And it's kind of like this huge, big zero just gets bigger. And you go, I have no idea what any of this is about.
The only thing that's as infinite as Allah is my ignorance.
Just about. The thing that happens, I mean, they'll talk about it in terms, it gets subtler. And sometimes so subtle that unless you realize that I have no knowledge and my knowledge is so spotty, that it keeps you humble, it keeps you patient, and like I said, helps to have a good sense of humor here, because you're going to screw up still. It just gets, Sheikh Tanner talks about it as the path gets thinner and thinner where you can walk and stay on the path.
I used to screw up, Sheikh, but that doesn't happen anymore. You know, that one, I'm getting better, right? So I won't screw up anymore. Yeah.
That's why we talk about holding on to the rope of the law. Sometimes there isn't any path. All you got is the rope. And sometimes that rope is really, really thin. It's kind of unwound, and there's like a little thread you're hanging on to, and you're going, I sure hope this holds.
Is this even a rope anymore?
Yeah, exactly. It can get pretty thin. So that's why all of the tools that we have in Sufism are there for these different kinds of situations. And why I look at Tariqa as, you know, the thing that the firemen hold when you jump out of a window, it's a kind of a net kind of thing, a little stretched fabric to catch you. That's Tariqa. Because there's times you go, nobody understands what's going on with me. Oh, we do. Yeah, we don't have exactly what your problem is, but we know. We know how hard it is. This is hard. This is the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. Raising kids compared to that, they'll be okay.
And you decided to have three. I mean, God.
I know, right? Hey, I would have more if I was younger.
Sheikh, I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was a point in my life where I experienced a high level of energy, the one we were talking about earlier. Like, I never had that energy before. Means I could even feel through my heart, and then I can just, even if I enter in the room and then I notice that people notice me, even like look at back who is coming, and then it's not there anymore. And I know it goes up and down maybe, but I crave for that feeling, that energy. It's like sometimes you had a couple of beers and then you were high and then you want to go back, but energy is not something you can drink and then have it again. How to bring that energy back, or is there any way we I'm going against the tide where I'm not experiencing this anymore? As much I would say, it's like before it was 90% and now it's like 30%.
Can I do this one, Sheikh?
Okay.
You're reminding me, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Groundhog Day. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
No, okay. Anyway, there's this point in that film where he's going through the same day over and over and over. That's sort of the point of the film. He gets stuck in the same day and he's living it over and over and over again. Anyway, one day he makes a kind of series of choices which lead him to this just amazing night and this date with this woman that goes perfectly, and it's all like the energy's just flowing and everything's fantastic. And he wakes up the next day and he started the same day again and he has to try again. And he spends like the next few scenes of the movie trying and trying and trying to recreate that night on purpose, but he can't because the energy wasn't his.
I think I've seen that movie somewhere. It reminds me of something. Then he got killed and then he
wakes up again. The energy, the point being that he was in the right place at the right time. It was not his energy. And the way he gets back to that place is not by trying to recreate that moment, because that just gets him slapped in the face. The way he gets back to that energy is by understanding that it's not about him and that he's there to serve and enjoy life and be as present as possible, and the energy comes when it comes.
So what to do with this craving? It's like sometimes you're addicted to coffee and then you're like, you know, I want a coffee. You're like, where is that energy? You like my heart actually wants that. It feels that. And sometimes when I focus with heart, it raises from 30 to 40 and sometimes 50%, but not to the same level yet.
I think for all of us, that taste of Allah has been in our lives, maybe at one point or another point, maybe a couple times. And that taste, what Rumi calls wine, we go, more. And Rumi talks about it as like you have to go to the tavern to get that wine. So the wine is zikr or connection. The tavern is the durga, and the dancing or the friend, that intimacy is that connection that you have with your heart and Allah. So the intro to Allah is, here's a taste. And you go, oh, that's Allah? More. More, please. And Allah goes, the first one's free. If you want me, you're going to have to make some changes, because I don't want you, that little you. I want your heart. And that's when we go, well, how, what? But I'm sincere. And then Allah goes, okay, good.
Prove it.
Very good. How much do you want me? I want you completely, totally. Okay, then I want you to give up everything completely, totally.
Except on Sunday afternoons, because football's on then.
Yeah. And what about ice cream?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what, a kind of ice cream?
Belgian chocolate.
Oh, I don't know. Let me think about this a bit more.
The thing is, this is not about you. This is about Allah. You say, I want Allah. And Allah goes, who? What? Who are you?
Who's I?
Yeah, what does that mean? I don't understand that. No, I don't. Go away. There's too much you. I can't use you. I want the essence. If you want my essence, let's have your essence. And that's what we study in Sufism, is like how to get that back. Sonny, do we got some understanding here?
Yes. It's like what I could understand it. It's like, when a company sell a product, before they give you a sample, and then they want to, after that, they want you to buy it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you really liked the demo, did you?
So I had this demo thing. Now I have to work for it as per Allah's instructions to continue get the feeling or the thing. But, okay, yeah.
Yes, sir.
I think somebody or whoever could test that energy. I've never experienced something like more better wine than this.
Exactly. And
obviously, people will go for it. It's amazing.
There isn't anything better. There isn't.
Yeah.
What can I say? We all try and get to that place, and that's why we do zikr, adab, rabita, and work and fight our nefs. The nefs are kind of like holding up an umbrella against Allah's baraka. Like, oh, that's just too much blessings. No thanks. That's just too much. I'm so used to being under my umbrella and protected. Please, no more blessings. And it's just a habit. I'm used to having an umbrella. And you're asking me to put away my umbrella. Well, that's just too much.
Yeah, I think what you just said is so true that, I know how I can get to the God. to get that feeling, but I put that enough, and I said, no, that's too much, too big for me. I can't do it. Yeah. Yeah. True.
And that's, and what it takes is what, you know, I talked about last time, which is the spiritual warrior. You have to realize that you are facing the greatest enemy in the universe. That enemy will not stop just because you want him to. He is the nemesis. You want a villain? That's the one. That's it. That's the worst one you're ever going to face. And its name is Sonny Shake.
Me against me.
Bingo.
The other thing is that even wanting to be there faster than you can and wanting to put your umbrella down earlier, that can even be a nafs in itself. That the story is, it's, well, I don't know, correct me if you think I'm wrong, Shake, but where I'm at the moment anyway, it feels like, you know, the story is the story, and when you're ready, you're ready. And yes, you have to fight, but you also have to acknowledge that Allah is in charge and not you, and that you're not going to get to Allah, you know, tomorrow, because that's what your nafs wants. You know, the whole point is to learn, right? And part of that is understanding why you're fighting your nafs and what it means, and understanding what that battle's all about. So I don't know if it can be a quick fix, like just get to Allah tomorrow kind of thing. Because it doesn't seem to work that way.
Yeah. The thing is, once you see or taste that wine, you next have to build a structure that will hold you and Allah together, the tavern. That requires a strong foundation that's based on reality and clarity, humility, and intention. That intention has to be there all the time. I want to be with Allah. And in the beginning, it's, you know, Allah says, I'm here. And you go, oh my God, that's wonderful. Allah's here. I want to be with you. And Allah goes, yes. Now let's get to work. Now you're wearing so many clothes. You're wearing all these different personalities and these habits and everything. That doesn't work in my world. Would you mind taking those off, please? And that takes the rest of your life, because you think, okay, well, I've taken off my robe. Yeah, but there's still you that thinks that it's your robe. It's not my robe? No, you don't own anything. What? But I've got a nice car. I have a couple cars. I am rich in cars. Oh, those aren't mine, are they? What? And all of this is like messing with
you. When your 2-year-old steals the keys, they're not.
All this wiring has to change. These are old, this is old stuff, and it takes time and effort, and like I say, a sense of humor, to be able to rewire your brain to understand the whole business is Allah's, not yours. That's the truth, man. And that whole process is Sufism. Using the tools that we have, like I said, zikr, adab, rabita, intention, sincerity, focus, and patience. Comments, questions? Is that reasonable, Sonny?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I can relate to everything you have said. Everything, word by word, I can relate to it, and I understand what you mean. It's actually very helpful when I'm not thinking of my own and try to understand it, but when somebody who's experienced like you, who repeats in front of me, it makes more sense. And it's like, oh, okay, this is what's actually happening. I can see the full picture. Yeah.
Yeah, been there.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
That's why we have a shake.
Okay, yeah. Rekaya.
I was just thinking when Mo was talking before about trying to get there closer. Trying to get there quicker to get back to the Allah, the energy connection that you had before. I was just thinking it's like driving where you've got speed limits. Even if in the moment you think, and your nafs always thinks, oh, if I go just that little bit faster, I'll get there quicker, right? It's like it makes a fraction of a minute difference. It really doesn't change anything. But Jess goes, no. If we go there quicker, like if we get there quicker, then it'll be fine and we'll get there on time and we'll do it all right and everything. It's like, no, because A, no matter how much faster you go, you're going to make like a minute or two difference. It's not going to matter at all. And B, you might have the cops around and go, oh, yeah, he's a fine. It's not going to help. It's you've got to do things in your own time, in Allah's time, and be respectful of that. You'll get there. It's just you've got to realize that it's Allah's time that you're doing it in.
Yes, who gets there?
And exactly. That,
and the answer is who gets there?
Okay, Sheikh, I have one more quick question.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the Rumi says your heart knows the direction, knows the way, run in that direction. Right? And in my case, at least, I know what's the direction. Right? How to know how long we have to wait to reach the goal, that direction? Because sometimes you think it's 10 years from now, and another time you think, if I have to wait 10 years and go there anyway, why not now? And it's just, and then you think, oh, I have to finish this of this material world, and then that. So how to know this exactly, when is the time?
I'm going to just do what my Sheikh does. We would all come in, and he'd say, what time is it? And we look at our watches and go, oh, yeah, it's a couple minutes to two. He said, no, it's now.
All of that time that you anticipate and all of the time that you remember is an illusion.
There is only now.
All of it. It's an illusion. It's a hologram. It's information that is in your brain.
Yeah, but I understand that. But doesn't it take time to have the clear picture, even though you know that's the direction? Then you want to have a pretty much clear idea. Like we go in a business and then we know what business we're going in, how we're going to achieve this, and then put this
action.
All right.
Yeah.
If you're a character in the story, you go.
I was just going to say, when you stop fighting and pretending that there's time.
If you're the character in the story, yes, it will take 50 pages to get to the third chapter. But if you're the person who's holding the book, it's all, you can open it at any point.
Okay.
What part are you playing the character, or are you with Allah? Whose time is it?
The things that have to happen in the right way if you stay enough out of the way. Like, okay, the story of the boy and the butterfly. Very quick story. This boy's given a caterpillar to watch. He loves it. He feeds it every day, keeps it in the jar, just watches it and has a great time watching it. Then the chrysalis begins to build. So on the branch, the caterpillar starts spinning the chrysalis and then finally goes inside, and several weeks pass. It begins to wiggle. The boy thinks, I will help it. So he gets out his sharp knife and a pair of scissors and cuts away the chrysalis. The butterfly falls out, wobbles a little bit trying to move its wings, and dies. The butterfly needed the chrysalis to be hard so it could build up the muscles for it to fly and then break the chrysalis with its wings. The boy interrupted that, thinking he will save time and he will be a helper. Things take time because we have to develop our muscles. Anything that happens fast means it can go away fast. That's why things have to be built on a foundation that's strong, sturdy, and reliable. And that is what trusting Allah is about. Trust in Allah is where all of this happens. The more trust you have, the more that you can let go of this self. Du verstehst? You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. Good questions. Really good stuff. A lot to think about. Bismillahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillah rabbil alamin rahmanir rahim. Maliki yawmiddin. Iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in. Ihdina sirata mustaqim. Sirata ladzina an'amta alayhim. Ghayril maghdubi alayhim waladdallin. Amin. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
Walaikum assalam.
Walaikum assalam.
Walaikum assalam. Thanks, Shay. Salam, everyone.
Take care.
Salam, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Good luck, Amina.
Thank you.
See you next time. Bye.
Assalamu alaikum, Marids, seekers, curious, and interested listeners. We appreciate you and are happy to share our Sufi message. Your donation will help support our Sufi center in Sydney, where we do zikr, sobat, spiritual counseling, and healing services. We believe the message should be free, but it costs equipment, rental, services, software, and hardware to get this to you. So thank you for choosing our podcast among all the millions available. If you go to our website, AnsariSufiOrder.org, you will be able to donate through PayPal whatever you think this information is worth to you. Blessings and love, the Australian Ansari Sufi Order.